Good evening, everybody. James McCanny here with my Science Hour for July 6, 2023. Hope you had a very good 4th of July and celebrated in a traditional American way. So, at any rate, many topics to cover tonight. The first of which I'm going to announce, we're having a warehouse moving sale. I'm upgrading my warehouse for the water filter products only. And as a result, we're just trying to shed some of the amount of stuff we have to move, mainly MR5s. And so this is an opportunity for you to become a proud owner of an MR5 whole house water filter system at an extremely low price. And so that's on the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. That's JMCC Water Filters with an S at the end. jmccwaterfilters.com. And another webpage you can go to, a very simple, and you get right to the MR5 page. It's mymr5.com. mymr5.com. So either one. And what's going on is we have a certain amount of stock we want to just move out quickly so we don't have to move it. And it but anyway, that's the short story. And then when the stock that we're trying to move gets sold, then the sale will come off. So if you get there quickly, you'll be one of the lucky ones to get an extremely low price. And just to give you an idea, the MR5, what most people purchase when they buy an MR5 is called the Best Deal Package. It's the MR5 whole house water filter, stainless steel case with 5 20-inch filter elements in there. And for your entire house, it goes at the point of entry where the water comes in your house, so you have both hot and cold water filtered in your house. So you get the MR5 with its initial pack of filter elements, plus you get the UV filter, the final filter sterilizer, and 2 bulbs. So 1 bulb will last you a year. The second bulb will last you the second year. So you get 2 years of service from that. And you get an extra pack of filter elements for the MR5. So that's a couple years of use of the MR5 without buying additional filter elements, etc. And typically, that's around $2,300. And now you can get it literally for about $1,000 off. And so the $1,366 is the price for the Best Deal Package. And so anyway, once again, that's going to be a short-term sale. People are going to jump at that and take advantage of that. And so we have a limited number of units we're going to sell at that price. And as soon as those are sold, the sale will go off. So once again, the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com, or to go directly to the MR5 page, it's I would put in a www.mymymr5.com. Okay, so I'll announce that again at the end of the show. But I have, like I say, a lot of topics to cover tonight. Another thing that's coming up here, just so that you're aware and listening for in the future, I'll make the final announcement when this actually comes to fruition, but it's in the wings right now. It's something that I have set up a special arrangement, and it's called a concierge service. And what is that? That's basically a private planner. A concierge is a person who does private planning for your vacation, for travel, for trips that you want to go on, for special events, things like that. And so they are people who are experts in, say you wanted to go to an opera in London or something. Let's just take an example. They could plan your flight. You'd say, well, you want to spend 2 or 3 days in London and go to this particular opera or something. They would plan it all out. They would find the best deals, get you into the best hotels at the best price. They would ask you details like how much do you want to spend. If you want an economy hotel, they would find that for you. Or find maybe a good hotel, a nice hotel, at the same price as an economy hotel. And they would do all kinds of things like this for you. And, of course, this is a service. That's a service they provide. But if you travel more than, say, so let's put it in terms of money. If you spend more than, say, $30,000 a year traveling, and if you're a traveler, that's not much money. Some people are like, holy cow, that's a lot of money. No, if you're a person who's retired or if you're in business, you can easily spend that on a couple trips or maybe even a single trip. And what if you realized that you, when you got to where you were planning on going, everything was not like you planned? The advertisements that you read online when you were doing your planning were not what they announced to be, and you're stuck there. A concierge service would be the kind of service that you're not going to deal with those kind of things because they're experts and they have experts in other parts of the world who will help you if you want to go to remote places or things like that. So anyway, but the way it'll work is I will personally screen people. In other words, it's not just, hi, I'm Joe. I want your see about your service. No. It's going to take a little bit of a screening process before I pass your name on to these people who are very good. They're professionals. And then it'll be, that's the way it'll work. But anyway, that's not in place yet. So don't call me. Don't send emails yet. But I'm just letting you know when that pops, be aware of it. I'll be announcing it on this show. And literally, it's just, it's going to save you a lot of money. It's going to put you in a much better position. And that's for people who travel and on a regular basis. Okay, so enough of that. Okay, so here's a story that's very interesting, and it has to do with 5G phones. There's a plethora of 5G phones. Most people already have them. If, you know, your old 4G phone was not working. And I think they have planned obsolescence in the phones so that it forces you to get the newest zippy model out there, which would be 5G. But there's some complications with the airlines. So when what they're worried about is that the 5Gs are short range. They're more powerful. The 4G phones were long range. You did not need many cell towers. 5G is short range, and you need lots and lots of cell towers. So there's a lot more communication bandwidth. There's a lot more energy in the air with 5G in a local place, and especially if you got 300 people on an airplane with their 5G phones blaring out trying to find a tower, and all of a sudden you take off in an airplane and there's no towers. All these phones go active, signaling at the highest level, and you're trying to drive a jetliner with 300 people in it. This is a problem. It's a big problem, and it's been known about for a while. But anyway, after July 1st, airplanes that are not fitted with proper equipment to get rid of this noise, planes that are not properly equipped will be grounded. So this is, of course, the busiest air traffic weekend of the world for the United States. Anybody in the U.S., you know, it's just, and there's already flight cancellations because of understaffing. The airlines are having a difficult time. They have been since the COVID era because of laying off employees, employees quitting because they were required to get a vaccination, which they didn't want to do, so they quit or were fired. And so the airlines have never quite recovered from all of this, and so there's a lot of flight cancellations. Now, throw on top of that 5G phones and the complication that after July 1st, which has already passed, after July 1st, you cannot fly a commercial airplane that is not fitted with 5G cancellation equipment. So then you have all these airlines trying to rush and install this equipment integrated into their programs, and you have a formula for disaster. Okay, so anyway, Not to mention there's three other holidays in the summertime. I think we've already had one. 4th of July is the second one. And there's two yet to come. And those are always peak travel times, airline times, etc. And just to give you an idea, the other day, something like 7,000 flights were canceled. Now, that's the number that was canceled. So imagine the number of actual flights which are flying around the United States at any given time. It's just unbelievable. The airline industry is, I mean, the fact that this system even works is amazing. And especially after the, like I say, the COVID era, when it was just in chaos, they survived, they're putting it back together. And now what's happening too is that people are traveling more than ever. People are traveling. They're you know, they were held in a box for a couple of years, nobody going any place, and so now everybody's running out, going any place they can, trying to just, you know, get their brains back together. Okay. Richard Branson, I announced this on my show a few weeks ago, and I said I would follow up on it. And last week, I really didn't have much information, so I didn't really talk much about this. But last week, Richard Branson's company, Virgin Galactic, this is not Virgin Orbit, which is on hiatus, has actually been put on hold, which is launching microsatellites. But no, Richard Branson's Virgin Galactic, which is the people-carrying part of it, had its first commercial flight with six passengers. Paying passengers, three of them were from the Italian Space Agency, and three of them were from an institute of research. I think it was like atmospheric research in from Italy. All of these passengers from Italy, six passengers, they go into space, they come back and land, and so became the first successful commercial flight for Branson's Virgin Galactic, which is a big step. But what's really interesting is the lack of publicity fanfare or news coverage fanfare. Most of what they talked about when I saw news coverage was Branson's failures. They went right into the Virgin Orbit company, which failed. They didn't talk about Branson being successful or his first commercial flight because he's not one of the boys. See, Elon Musk joined in, is doing military launches and with SpaceX, but Branson is not one of those insiders that's going with the party line. He's going completely independent, completely commercial, and completely out of government. What would you call it? Government oversight? Okay, let me back up. There is definitely government oversight, the FAA, etc. But he's not doing the traditional space thing where the government has the big piece of the pie. Okay, that's a good way to put it. And so they don't like Branson because he's very methodical. He's got a lot of money. He weathered COVID. I saw an interview of him where he was talking about weathering COVID, and he said, yeah, we thought we were going to lose it all, everything. His dozen or 15 companies, I don't know how many companies he's got, but he has travel, he has an airline industry, Virgin Atlantic, I think it's called, and then he's got the cruise company, I forget what they call that, but he's got cruise for no kids, I don't know what you call it, adults only. And so he's got all of these different businesses going on, and of course, very hard hit with the COVID thing because it cut into all of his things which are related to travel and vacationing, etc. But they don't like him because he's not part of the people who, let's just say, feed off of the government or are dependent on the government. And another way of looking at this is look at what Musk is doing. Elon Musk is getting a tremendous amount of money from the government. They're doing launches to the space station. They're doing military launches. They're doing launches of equipment for the government, of telescopes for the government. They just launched the Euclid Dark Space Telescope just a week ago. That was SpaceX. But Branson ain't doing that. He's just going for the commercial market. So in another few sideline stories about Elon Musk, Elon Musk was not getting the contracts to launch in the early days of SpaceX because it was the good old boys. It was the Boeings and the traditional aerospace industry that was getting the launches for military. So he took them to court and he says, hey, we're not getting the contracts. And the day they settled out of court, Google and Fidelity, both CIA-owned entities, gave Elon Musk $1 billion investment. And so that kind of told you what happened behind the scenes. Musk became one of the boys. He bought into the system, and the CIA had their fingers deep into his company. Okay, Branson didn't do that. Branson toughed it out, still is strictly commercial, non-government related, other than just the FAA control, of course, things like that. So they don't like Branson. Anyway, enough said. I think you get the idea. I saw the interview where Branson was talking about, I think he has 60,000 employees. And the press went after him, hoping, gleaning over the idea that Branson would go under. And Branson had 60,000 employees at the time. And he went to the British government and he said, hey, help us out here. I got 60,000 employees. We need a little help. And he didn't ask for free money, which he could have. He could have said, give me some free money. You know, COVID, everybody's giving out free money. But he asked for low-interest loans to carry him through the COVID period, and they didn't give it to him. And then the press came back on Branson and said, look at little rich boys asking for money. He lives on his private island out in the Caribbean. No, we should not give him anything. They were gloating over the fact that Branson was going under, but the guy weathered it out, and they hate him for that. They don't like him because now he's coming through, and he's tougher. He's even more resilient, and he saved the jobs of 60,000 employees. So anyway, yeah, they don't like Branson. He's not one of the boys. He doesn't go, he didn't sign any contracts with the CIA or the MI6 for them to bail him out, and then he's owned. No, he didn't do that. They don't like him. Okay. Anyway, another story. Lots and lots of press lately about Tunguska. Now, Tunguska, 1905, I think it was, a big explosion levels the place. Explosion heard as far away as London. And shockwaves, I mean, this baby blew. This was a big explosion. But now, just a little history here. In the mid-1990s, I was working with atmospheric scientists from the University of Novosibirsk in Russia. And these are guys that went to Tunguska. These are scientists, Russian scientists, were boots on the ground at Tunguska. And they were looking for remnants of a bolide, some kind of physical thing that came into the atmosphere. And there was no crater there. There's nothing there. You go to the epicenter where all the trees are blown out in the radial direction. So you can tell exactly where the epicenter would be. And there ain't nothing there. It's just charred, for 50 miles around. All the trees are just blown down and burned. And they're still there in their preserved state because in that cold environment, fungus just doesn't, it just takes a long time to act. So things are pretty much preserved the way they were in 1905, over 100 years ago. So anyway, they said, that, and this is why one of the reasons why they loved my work, and they were translating it and teaching it, etc., is because it explained the Tunguska event as a discharge from a locally passing comet. That and it fits all of the stories because the sky brightened for days before and afterwards. And so that's because there was a comet. We were very close to a comet. It could have been a relatively small one. But anyway, this is an electrical discharge out in the middle of nowhere. And they found a second one, a much smaller one. And so the discharge hit Earth there and basically an electrical current. Now, everywhere, you cannot go on the internet without seeing the Tunguska or some clown referring to it as a bolide exploding up in the air. Okay, if that happened, all the vaporized or little pebbles or sand grain-sized stuff from that meteorite would be blown all over the ground, and it would be very, very, very visible. Those little things coming in at hyperspeeds would have penetrated into the wood. They would be all over the place, and the Russian scientists found nothing. Not a trace, not a grain of sand, not a pebble, not a molecule of something that would have come from an exploding bolide. But in the Western scientific, the story they're trying to push, they're trying to get away from that idea that it was an electrical discharge, which it was, very clearly. And everybody's saying, oh, it was this bolide. And you see Joe Rogan and the clowns that he puts on his show. And then, I like Joe Rogan, but he's not a scientist, believe me. And he's got all these clowns that pretend to be scientists on his show. And they're all, exclaiming that this is what happened. No, it was an electrical discharge. But the reason I'm bringing this up is because right now, in the last 2 weeks, you cannot go any place on the internet without seeing some reference to the Tunguska meteor and this thing blowing up, some piece of rock blowing up in the upper atmosphere and causing this. And what you see there is not what would happen. That's not what would happen. The trees, because imagine the blast is coming down, not outwards. The blast is coming down. And so most of the trees would be standing burnt up, not laying down in a radial pattern. And so there's no crater, there's no debris. The night glow tells you that it was a comet. How does an exploding bolide explain the night glow before and afterward, days before and days afterwards? It doesn't. So these people are just spouting stuff, like I say, a bunch of clowns being put on major radio. And unfortunately, when Joe Rogan had his issues, kind of like Alex Jones types of issues, with the powers that be, he folded. They put all these people on, basically the CIA disinformation agents filled his show. He's got some good guests, but basically they're spokespeople for the CIA, for the disinformation crew, in a very subtle manner, pumping this information as if it were fact. Okay, enough of that. Let me go down my list here. I did talk about this on my show before, but I want to talk about it again because there's a little more information coming out. Newly discovered Mayan city in the middle of the Yucatan, discovered by radar. It's called Lazar. And what they do is they send a radio beam from an aircraft down into the ground, and it reflects back upwards, and the rock that's in the ground gives a different signature than the savanna, trees and dirt, etc. And so they were able to map this city, 123 acres, they say, and in the middle of the jungle. So they're going to go in and start working on this. But unfortunately, they're already expressing their belief that this is a a city that was active in the classic period, which was from about 200 to 900 AD. And, you know, maybe that's true, and where those numbers came from, also very suspect. So at any rate, it's really unfortunate that archaeology has succumbed to, and especially if you have places like Mexico, where they have a very stringent hierarchy of archaeologists, and to become notable in that, you have to work your way up the ladder, etc. And that was in place when I was a kid living in Mexico. Or Egypt, where you have this tier structure of archaeology, and you have to adhere to the standard story that's going on. And so the Egyptian pyramid stories, that's why they don't change, in spite of the fact that very clearly the pharaohs did not build the pyramids. They you know, with 100,000 slaves walking around in loincloths, excuse me, it didn't happen. You know, somebody else built those big pyramids, and they were, you know, their uses, etc., were very different than what, you know, the king's chambers, no. All of that is just pure garbage. And that's very much the way the structure is in Mexico, the archaeological hierarchy structure of experts. And so right away they started putting dates on this city. They start saying, oh, it's part of the classic period. Before they, you know, they pick up a potsherd and they go, oh, this is from the classic period. And from then on, everybody has to repeat that. So anyway, more information on that in the future, but very interesting. And this city, it clearly was a very important city, much more than potentially all of the other known cities at this time. So that city will take a number of years for them to go in and clean it out and get it ready for tourism. But I heard some interesting statistics recently that the archaeology, which is a big factor, like when you go to other, say, resort areas of the world, they don't have the ruins. So a lot of people choose to go to the Mexican, what they call the Mexican Riviera, the coastline of southeastern coastline of Mexico, is because of these ruins. So it's a big income factor for the Mexican economy. And so anyway, and it just brings back memories when I was young, going there before Cancun or the Mayan Riviera, none of that was there when I was a young kid there. I was probably 22 years old in my Ford Econoline van that I traveled in, and I had my teaching job. I was teaching in Mexico. That's what I was doing there, teaching the children of the wealthiest people possibly on the planet, and then traveling. And so when I was in Quintana Roo, it wasn't even a state. It was still a wild area, with the Lacandon Indians living there, literally living there. And like I say, Cancun did not exist. It was not even there at that time. So when I went to, say, Chichen Itza or Uxmal, Chichen Itza, Uxmal, or Tulum, or any of the other hundreds of places or just little places out in the country, there was nobody there. You know, they literally could sleep there at night amongst the pyramids. But now it's totally, totally, highly controlled tourist areas. And, you know, millions of people, literally millions of people visiting these per year. So, you know, and I climbed the pyramids. I was up on top. I was able to see them. But now they don't even let you go near any of these structures. And they're cordoned off. They only take you to the main structures. They don't take you off into the far reaches of the city, where I was actually there doing surveying work where surveying equipment, all of that's off limits now. It's just incredible. But the benefit is this creates employment for the Mexican people, and very good employment. The people living quite well. But anyway, be that as it may, this particular city will be there, developed in a few years, and very much worth the visit whenever they announce that. The Euclid Dark Space Telescope. Now, this is an interesting one. This is being done by, from what I understand, it's primarily a European Space Agency effort being launched by SpaceX about a week ago. And its purpose is to look for dark matter, dark energy symptoms in the universe. Now, the whole idea of looking for dark energy and dark matter is really an oxymoron, because you're looking for something that has no physical properties, but all it does is exhibit gravity. But you're so far away that this telescope is not going to see anything related to gravity. Gravity is not a visible force. In fact, it's more invisible than any of the other forces or all the other forces combined. You can see if something's giving off electromagnetic radiation, you can see it, radio waves, microwaves, ultraviolet, UV visible light, X-rays, gamma rays. You can see radiation from a body. But in terms of dark matter relative to gravity, you cannot see something because of its gravity. You can only detect it by gravitational means. So what are they looking for? What exactly are they expecting to find? They're looking at something that has no physical properties, or they're trying to find it, I should say. So my question is, what the heck are they doing? I mean, what are they expecting from this? You know, it'd be like you walking into a dark room. If you've ever done this, I've done this. You walk into a dark room in a building that's nighttime, so there's, you know, and you cover the, you know, you're, say, deep within a building, so there's no light coming in, there's no hall lights, and it's dark. I mean, it's the darkest dark. It's like cave dark. Darkness that there's just no light of any kind that your eyes can see. There might be, if you were an animal, you might see something in the infrared, but to the human eye, there's just no light available. Zero. I mean, no light. And so it's like walking into a dark room with your eyes and looking for something. You're not going to see anything. There ain't no light there. And so that's the same with the Euclid Dark Space Telescope. What the heck are they looking for? What are they expecting to find? What is the mission here? And anyway, it got me there. I'm baffled as to what they're expecting to find. But you better believe they're going to find something, because they have to keep their funding, to keep their jobs, to make it sound like, you know, and this sounds like when they sent up, for example, the COBE satellite. Back in the early 90s, there was a satellite they sent up to look for the 3-degree microwave background radiation. And that is from, of course, allegedly from the Big Bang. But they sent it up, and of course, they found something. They found some radiation, microwave radiation, 3 degrees approximate. But the first thing they discovered was blotchy. It was supposed to be perfectly smooth. And so anyway, oops, well, you got to go back to the drawing board. And it should have told them right there that something else was going on, that there was some other source of that, some other source of the microwave background radiation, that there was another source of that. But no, they continued to change the Big Bang theory according to the data. In other words, the Big Bang had to live on no matter what the data said. And it should have told them that, and nobody was bright enough to figure out that all they're looking at is this cloud of material that surrounds our solar system. And you can see that surrounding other stars nearby us. You can see that microwave signature of a cloud of stuff around the star way out. That's what I call the nebular ion cloud. It's what I call the capacitor, the solar capacitor, the anode part of the solar capacitor. But at any rate, rather than look for another source, they just kept on with the old, good old Big Bang theory. And then they found out that these things were moving, which they shouldn't be doing. And then again, once again, covering up the data to fit the Big Bang theory. Okay, on to the next topic. Now, this has to deal with solar panel projects. And, of course, the biggest retail sales area for solar panels is the American Southwest. You know, where it's dry, you have the best sun. And even there, they really don't provide you with much. A lot of people bought into this thinking, oh, my, the advertisements that I heard on the radio, I heard them myself, and I'm going, oh, my goodness, talk about false advertising. They would say, reduce your electric bill, never pay an electric bill again. And these people would sign up and have solar panels put on their house, only to find out that the solar company, the power company, didn't turn them on. These people would go, we've had these solar panels for a year and we don't see any reduction in our bill. And the energy company would come back and say, yeah, we haven't turned them on. And what? Yeah, because, it's just a goofiness. But what I'm going to talk about now are the big solar panel projects. And now what's going on, because of the tremendous amount of heat that's generated from these, they are depleting the groundwater. So you can imagine, here you are in Southern California or Nevada or Arizona, where there's limited groundwater in the first place, and somebody puts up a big solar panel project and it's depleting the groundwater. It's one of the side effects of having solar panels. And some of these people are out in little towns and their aquifer that's under their little town is drying up because somebody put solar panels in. So then they go over to the solar panel company and say, hey, you're drying up our water supply. And the solar panel company says, none of our business. What if it dries up the water, then too bad. Sayonara. You know, and so that's one thing that's going on. Another one, now this was something that in the, by the way, that location of that solar panel project depleting the groundwater was in Desert Center, California. So you can imagine just from its name, it's one of the drier places on the planet. Whew. So anyway, Desert Center, California, their water supply drying up because of solar panel projects. Here's another one, and I think this was in like Kansas, no, Nebraska, Scotts Bluff, Nebraska. A four-year-old solar panel project was hit by a hailstorm and totally destroyed. They needed 25 years of use out of this thing to pay off. And so imagine right now it's totally destroyed. And all of this glass from the solar panels being smashed is all over the ground. And that's going to do nothing but leach into the ground. The chemicals in those little pieces of glass are going to leach into the ground and destroy the groundwater there. Another form of groundwater destruction. Oh, my goodness. You know, the entire solar industry should have never, ever gotten off the ground. It was never a solution, never could have been a solution, and certainly not on a scale that would affect the world energy generation or the world energy usage. So what you're finding now are the side effects that nobody really thought about. When you're doing like I am, I happen to be myself in the energy industry with the wing generator, and in looking at solar panels and three-blade wind turbines and all the difficulties they had, Part of my whole effort was to not duplicate those difficulties in my system. In other words, if you look at all the problems that solar panels have or three-blade wind generators have, in my planning, in my functional specification to design the wing generator, I specifically said it cannot do this, it cannot do that, it cannot do this other thing. And it had all of these things that it could not do because those are environment affecting, killing birds, other things like that. It cannot, a product that goes out into the public cannot do those things. And what are they doing? They have millions of birds killed every year. They have eagles killed, which is illegal. And then the government agency in charge of that comes in and goes, oh, well, we'll give you a waiver. What do you mean a waiver for killing eagles? You get a waiver for killing eagles? You know, what planet are these people living on? And you know, these projects also, they use optimal numbers. And so people are selling air. These companies, solar companies, three-blade wind turbine companies are selling air. They cannot possibly succeed financially unless they get government subsidies, etc. So anyway, just a disaster after disaster. I'll be talking about a few more disaster type of things here in a minute. I'm going to be talking about the big fire that occurred in Arizona. I'll be talking about that in a minute. But first, a little bit of information here from Illinois. This article just came in this week. The underground water supplies of Illinois are just laden with toxic forever chemicals. Now, the forever chemicals are the ones like the PFAS chemicals. And I have an actual product that I saw on my webpage that's certified to remove PFAS chemicals, especially in these areas where it's really, really bad. It goes along with the whole house water filter. Have them for sale on the webpage. And they are not a standalone filter. You have to use them in conjunction with the MR5. And so they never go on sale because there's no, they're individual items, and we make them based on the sale. It takes a few weeks to turn them around if somebody purchased one. But very important to know that there's a product on the market that's certified to remove PFAS chemicals for the entire house. And they're kind of pricey, but then again, when you're talking about your health, for example, one of the PFAS filters costs $2,900. That includes shipping. But what is it compared to your health? When you have, for a day in a hospital, $10,000. It's just, you know, the medical, especially if people have advanced illnesses or cancer or things like that caused by the PFAS chemicals, then they are, you know, I mean, the amount of medical bills you run into are astronomical. So compare that to a couple thousand dollars for a water filter that gets that out of your water. And I've noticed, too, recently people are not, their spending habits have changed. And so I don't think people are very health conscious anymore. I think they're more interested on spending their money on going on vacation, etc. There was an amazing statistic that came around, it's a number of months ago. It said something like 60% of American families, if they had an emergency, some kind of just minor, this is a minor emergency, not major emergency, that they could not raise $1,000 in cash to cover a basic emergency. So imagine all the houses out there that are maybe need a roof, maybe need a, you know, improvement in the plumbing system or just basic maintenance. And imagine that there are people that cannot raise $1,000. Well, a new roof is going to cost you $20,000 maybe or more. Or other things. So people just don't have the money anymore. And I think people are choosing to go on vacation. It's just an escape. It's just a way for them to get out of, the reality world that's been stuffed down your throats. That's just the way it is. But the water quality in Illinois, underground water supplies, toxic forever chemicals, and those things don't go away. They're there, and they're just not going to go away with time. The other thing to note about this is the biggest source of the forever chemicals is Chicago. So you can only imagine the water in Chicago. Whoosh. I do talk to people who have, water filters in Chicago. And it's, the Chicago water is horrifically bad, as in most major U.S. cities. And I find it comical. This is what is, it's not comical, it's bizarre. All these cities will tell you, their water departments will tell you, we meet federal standards. We're in the top 5% of good water in the country. Just complete, fabrication. I mean, there's nothing true about any of that. And a lot of little towns too. But every municipal water department will tell you they comply with federal standards, which are centuries old. Decades old, outdated, have nothing to do with reality. They don't tell you really what's in your water. Okay, so enough of that. This is a story that just is phenomenal. The Nikola Company, which is it's kind of like a name takeoff from Tesla. But anyway, if I were Nikola Tesla, I would be rolling over in my grave, everybody wanting to use your name for electric cars. Be that as it may, the Nikola plant, now there's a company called Nikola that it's building, its claim to fame is building semis, large vehicles for electric vehicles. Four of its semi-trucks went up in flames this past week in the parking lot of the Nikola factory in Phoenix. And they say the smoke from that was just absolutely horrendous. And typically, you don't use water on a fire like this. You don't use water because that shorts out the batteries that are now exposed, causing them to burn even harder, to burn even more ferocious. But they were trying to keep the fire from spreading to other semi-vehicles that were on the property. So just imagine the horrendous amount of environmental pollution going on from these things burning, toxic fumes, etc. And this is one incident. It's isolated. Nobody's getting hurt. They said on the news in Phoenix that there were 50 firefighters involved in trying to contain this fire. So they're just trying to contain it. They can't put it out because the fire is internal to these electric battery packs. And so they were trying to just contain this fire from spreading to other nearby vehicles that were also on the parking lot. But now extrapolate this a little bit to a crowded freeway. Imagine a crowded freeway, Los Angeles, six lanes going one way, six lanes going the other way, or some places eight lanes going one way, eight lanes going the other direction. Crowded, rush hour traffic, everybody moving very slowly. And one of these semi-trucks or even an automobile, an EV car, goes up in flames. And, the people next to, it's crowded to the point where you might not even be able to open your car door to quickly get out of the car. Or imagine a mom with two or three little kids in a minivan trying to get out and get those kids out of the car and then run away down the freeway between the cars and everybody else trying to open their doors, just in their bumper to bumper. And once one of these goes up, it's going to start catching the cars and the trucks next to it on fire on the freeway. And it's just going to keep burning until it burns the whole freeway down. And this has not happened yet. But at that point, they would say, okay, we can't have electric cars on the highway anymore. But the federal government is pushing EV cars like they're the saving grace of mankind. There's no energy in the grid to charge all these vehicles. The major cities don't have enough electricity as it is. They're having blackouts and brownouts and, summertime air conditioning usage, peak electric usage. There's not enough electricity to charge many electric cars. So it's an industry that simply cannot succeed. But the federal government is trying to push everybody into electric cars. By the year 2030, they want to eliminate gasoline cars. The real solution is hydrogen. And that's the road I'm going down with the wing generator, etc. But electric vehicles, once some of these massive fires take place, they're going to have to, it's going to have to eliminate. Or even worse, imagine if it's in a tunnel and this thing is burning and this is what would happen. It'd become like a jet engine because the smoke would be going out one end and the oxygen would be coming in the other end, and it would become like a jet engine. It would just become an inferno. It'd be like being inside of a jet engine. There's a thing called the rocket stove. And it's, kind of like a backyard invention that uses the principle of the Venturi or the ramjet. Now, the way a ramjet works is that you have a scoop on the front of the vehicle. There's no moving parts. This is what the V1 rockets used in Germany. This was the World War II V1 rocket. They'd launch them off a catapult, a steam catapult, to get them moving. And once they're moving, the engine kicks in. It's just a Venturi tube and then the gas is injected at the narrow point, and it comes out the other side burning. And it's a jet engine. It's basically the simplest form of jet engine. That's what a tunnel would become with a fire inside of it. The air would come in one end, fuel this fire 100 times more than normal, and then the exhaust would go out the other end. I mean, it would just be, in terms of a disaster, it would be a horrific nightmare. And, in terms of human loss of life, they don't allow, for example, there's restrictions on what you can take into a tunnel. There's restrictions on materials or flammable or explosive materials. You cannot take them inside of a tunnel for that reason. But you can take an electric car into a tunnel and nobody blinks an eye. So anyway, this fire of four semi-trucks in Phoenix at the Nikola plant is just the beginning of the beginning of the end. The Japanese and other European car makers are going to hydrogen. The only question is where are they going to get the hydrogen, especially green hydrogen from natural resources, energy. That's where the wing generator comes in. But currently they're getting hydrogen from processing coal and natural gas and methane gas primarily. Okay, a few minutes left here in the show. I just want to mention all of the crazy people. When you see these videos online And I don't spend much time watching this, but you get every now and then these things will pop up and you watch it for a minute. Delusional, angry, stupid, just crazy, crazy people that previously were not visible. Delusional, you know, ideas that you just wonder, where do the people even get this stuff? I've developed an expression that diversity, equality, and sustainability only exist in the university, college, university classroom. That's my latest. That would be a good bumper sticker. Okay, on to the last topic here. I just want to remind you the warehouse moving sale that's going on. The warehouse moving sale, we're moving to a new warehouse with the water filter stuff, and so we want to move out some MR5 products just to so we don't have as much to move, and we have a certain number of these we're going to sell at basically the lowest price ever, about $1,000 off retail. So instead of $2,380, they are like $1,366, I think, is the price for the best deal. That's the MR5, the UV filter with two bulbs, and then an extra pack of filter elements for the MR5. Typically, is like $2,300, and right now they're on sale for like $1,366, I think it is, and also includes free shipping to the 48 states, Alaska, and Hawaii. And Canada pay extra shipping. It's usually not much, but we do charge extra for them for shipping. But everybody else, 48 states, gets free shipping. So it's really an amazing deal. And so take part in that. It's not going to last long. We just have a small amount of stock we want to move out so that we don't have to move it to the new warehouse. And so anyway, go to the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. Once again, that's jmccwaterfilters.com. And some other people have coupon codes that you could still use if you're aware of those, but we stopped using coupon codes because of this big sale. You already have amazingly low price on these. So if you've been thinking about an MR5 whole house water filter, go to that webpage and take part in that now. Once again, the webpage, jmccwaterfilters.com. Click on the products button at the top of the page. And I think the first line is the MR5. Go there and take advantage of that sale. And I'm out of time here for this week, so we will talk to you next week. This is James McCanny. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we're at the crossroads. Good night.